Thank you. As was mentioned, my presentation will focus on plant-based nitrogen diagnostic methods. And really the question is whether or not we can use whole plants or some parts of the plants, or what is the relationship between the two. And I'd like to acknowledge this is part of a chapter that we prepared that I co-authored with Noura Ziadzi, Etina Kambouri, and Bernie Zeebarth. The presentation, as I mentioned, I'll talk about whole plants and plant parts. For whole plants, I will focus on the concept of critical and dilution curve for shoot biomass and how we can use this critical end curve to calculate an index of nutrition for whole plants. And when I'll talk about plant parts, I will focus primarily on how we can interpret what we get from measurements on plant parts in relation to this index of nutrition based on whole plants. And I will provide examples mostly on potatoes, but also on other crops from more recent work that we've done. Plants are very good integrators of what has happened in the past in terms of soil availability and climatic conditions. And plant-based diagnosis can improve and utilization efficiency. There are different approaches that can be used for plant-based nitrogen diagnostic. We can use whole plants, as I've mentioned, or parts of the plants. That could be petioles, single leaves, stem bases. We can use destructive measurements or non-destructive measurements using light reflectance and transmittance. But all these need to require a critical concentration, or at least a reference we can use for for optimal and conditions. So I'll talk first about whole plants. As you probably know, the N concentration in whole plants decreases during the growth cycle. And we can express this as a function of time, as a function of stages of development, or as a function of accumulated shoot biomass. This decrease in N concentration during the growth cycle is a result of an increase in the proportion of N-poor structural components and a decrease in the N-rich metabolic component. You can simplify this by saying essentially it's a result of an increase in the proportion of stems and a decrease in the proportion of leaves, and the leaves constitute the main metabolic components of the plants. This decrease in N concentration during the growth cycle has to be taken into account when we want to establish critical N concentrations. The concept of critical N dilution curve was first developed in the 80s, first in France, work done on tall fescue by a group of French scientists, and at about the same time, a group of British scientists were working on something very similar, but on cereal crops and potatoes and other hort crops. These two groups got together in the late 80s, and they came up with a few papers where they presented this critical N dilution curve in a very convincing manner, in which they put together all their data from different species. After that, this concept has been tested and validated for a number of crop species, peas, tomatoes, rice, sorghum, cotton. There are a number of others as well. And it's been tested also in very diverse environments in Canada, China, Argentina, Germany. There are probably others that I haven't named here. Essentially, for this critical N dilution curve, we express the N concentration of the shoot biomass as a function of the shoot biomass itself. And this is what it can look like, where you have the N concentration on the y-axis and the shoot biomass in terms of tons of dry matter per hectare on the x-axis. And you have this critical N curve here, which is described by an allometric function, where W is the shoot biomass, and you have two fitted parameters, A and B. Once you know the values of these parameters for a species or for several species, if you go to a field and you measure the shoot biomass during the growing season and you measure the end concentration of this shoot biomass, then you can calculate an index of N nutrition, which is the N measured in the field, divided by the critical N concentration, which is defined by this relationship that takes into account the shoot biomass. At first, when Greenwood and Lemaire got together, they were wondering if there were a set of parameters that would apply to all crops. They were wondering if there was a universal critical curve. And the first thing they looked at was comparing C3 and C4 species, and they found that they had the two groups of species had distinct parameters, so they had different critical end curves. Since then, there's been a number of studies that have been conducted, and there's been several species-specific curves that have been published, tall fescue, peas, ryegrass, rapeseed, cotton, and we'll see later on with potatoes. And some of the work that we did recently, we've shown that it was also specific curves for spring wheat and for winter wheat. In terms of cultivar differences within species, this is quite difficult to demonstrate, but as I'll show you later on, we've seen some differences in potatoes. And we've also shown with some of our work and others that this critical end curve applies on the different environment for corn. We essentially shown that the parameters that were used for corn in France do apply in Canada, and something similar was shown for Germany. Now, for potatoes, this work goes back a few years ago in the late 90s. We had a series of six experiments in eastern Canada, with different end rates and on two potato cultivars with and without irrigation. And in these experiments, we sampled weekly the shoot biomass. In that case, we included the tubers as part of the shoot biomass. And we determined the end concentration of that shoot biomass. From this data set, we selected a number of data points for which the shoot biomass and the end concentration was not limiting. And we ended up with two critical end curves for potatoes, one for each of the two varieties that we had in the experiment. We have a critical end curve for Shepherd at the top here, and one for Russet Burbank. These are the data points that we selected for which we knew, based on the data, that nitrogen was not limiting. And you can see the fitted parameters for these critical end curves. Just to see if these critical end curves measure during the growing season and the index of nutrition that we could calculate from these critical end curves, were good predictors of relative yield. This is what we have here in our experiment. The relative yield at harvest, the relative tuber yield, and the index of nutrition on the x-axis. As you can see, there's a pretty good relationship between the two. In this case, I mentioned we had irrigation treatments. The relationship was a bit different for irrigated and non-irrigated treatments. But overall, pretty good relationship. That means that the air nutrition index that we can calculate from this critical end curve for whole plants is a fairly good indicator of end deficiency. Later on, we've done similar work on corn and spring wheat, and also we also found good relationships between relative yield at harvest in both species and the index of nutrition measured during the growing season. There are different ways how we can use this concept of index of nutrition based on whole plants using critical end curves. We can use it for a post-season diagnosis of level of nutrition. If we want to know at the end of the season what happened during the growing season, we can use this approach either in our own experiments that we're conducting or on producers' fields. This concept has also been used in modeling. It's been used in the STIX series of model. These are generic models that were developed by French scientists that have been tested for several species. And we've used it in our own work on timothy. In modeling timothy growth, we've used this concept of critical end curves for whole plants in the model that we developed that we call CATIMO. Of course, the other use of this concept is for in-season diagnosis. But in this case, we need to measure the shoot biomass and the end concentration of that biomass during the growing season. The logistics of this are a bit difficult, so it might be challenging for producers and crop advisors to use this approach. And also the fact that the critical end curve really applies when we have more than 1 ton of dry matter. Below that, we would have to use a constant value because there's no dilution in the first part of the growth season. And then there's always a question, this might be too late for remedial action when we have short growing seasons. So what we've tried to do is to look at how we can use this fairly robust test here for end efficiency and how it relates to easy to make measurements like petiole nitrates and SPAD readings. And that brings me to talk about plant parts. We've looked at different things over the years. We've looked at using the uppermost colored leaf, either the end concentration of that leaf or the SPAD reading. We've done that on corn and wheat, and some of our colleagues in Europe have looked at grassland. In France, they've used stem-based nitrates in wheat, and we've done some work with petiole nitrates in potatoes. That's what I'll be showing in the next slide. So what is the relationship between what we measure in terms of nitrates in the petioles and this index of nutrition based on whole plants? And this is some of the data that we had. What we have here, the petiole nitrates on the y-axis and the index of nutrition on the x-axis for the two varieties, Russell Burbank and Shepherd, at different times during the growth cycle. And as you can see, overall, there's a pretty good relationship between what we measure in the petioles and what we have in terms of the index of nutrition of whole plants. I won't go into details with this, but from that we derived relationships of critical petiole nitrates as a function of time. In terms of corn, we've looked at using SPAD readings of the lastly fully emerged leaf. And again, we have in this case, I've put the index of nutrition on the y-axis and the SPAD readings on the x-axis, either the absolute values or relative values of SPAD readings. And in both cases, there's a good relationship between the two. We've also looked at using the end concentration of this uppermost colored leaf and in relationship with the index of nutrition, again, in corn. And we can express this end concentration of the leaf either per grams of dry matter or per leaf area. And in both cases, we found fairly good relationship between the two. So in summary, in terms of whole plants, this concept of critical end curves has been determined for several crop species, including potatoes. From this, we can calculate an index of nutrition based on whole plants, and it's a very robust plant-based N indicator. The advantage of this is that it's independent of time and stages of development, but its use for in-season diagnosis is a bit difficult. In terms of using plant parts, the question is always how do you define what is the critical N concentration. I guess what I've tried to show today is that it can be done by linking that to the index of N nutrition based on whole plants. And the advantage of plant parts is that it's certainly less destructive than using whole plants. Thank you. You could take it throughout the season. I mean, it's sort of independent of time and stage of development. So you can actually measure the index of nutrition as soon as you have a ton of dry matter per hectare, almost for 1 or 2 months. So you can take it at any time. But in terms of remedial action, if you want to use it to determine if you should add nitrogen in the season, you'd have to do it quite early in the growth cycle. But it can be used any time during the growth cycle.
How does this differ from just focusing on the leaf rather than the whole biome? Because basically nitrogen is more functionally related to what's going on in the leaf than the biomass is actually the response. So what happens if we focus on the leaf?
Okay.
criticality is okay, but if we see the critical level in the league vis-à-vis what happens at this one.
I'm not sure I understand correctly your question, but you can focus on the leaf if you can make a diagnostic based on the leaf. The difficulty often is to establish what is the critical, is the reference that you want to establish, and that's not always very easy to do when you're looking at parts of the plant. The advantage of working at whole plants, there's a good physiological basis of that decrease in concentration, and using that, it gives you a more robust test of the level of nutrition.
Yeah, in terms of, for example, in terms of spot aging, I think the reverse is happening because when you are aging spot, you're reading what's happening in the leaf, and that can vary depending on what's happening at that particular juncture in the soil, and sometimes you might not see the system enough.
Yeah, I think I understand. I think the whole plan is the good and the greater of what has happened previously. So you get to a point and you say, on July the 1st, my crop is at that level of nutrition, and that's a reflection of what has happened in the past, in the seeding or planting. What you're seeing at things, if you look at a single leaf and you measure the chlorophyll or the N content it gives you, at a given time, what you have today. But I think the index of a nutrition based on whole plants gives you a much better integration of what has happened and where you're at this given time.
Okay, time is wrong.
Okay, thank you.